Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah, it's the Mad Dog Dynasty League podcast. I'm your host, Rick Goreski. Today we have a very special guest ready to join us at any moment here. Brian Kotz, the owner of the Marauding Minotaurs, is going to join us. Waiting to see when Brian joins us here any moment. I'll be honest with you, too. This is a little bit of a test for our Mad Dog podcast. I have not had any guests join the show up to this point in time, so we're pretty excited, and it looks like we have our caller. Brian, are you there? Still there, buddy.
Yeah, I am. We did. I am here too. All right, live.
We can hear you really well, Brian, owner of the Marauding Minotaurs, one of the leagues that were a predecessor to the Mad Dog Dynasty League, the King for a Day Redraft League, where Brian is the owner of the Old Helm Ogres, longtime friend, definite longtime friend of both leagues, the King for a Day League and the Mad Dog Dynasty League. Many people may not know it, but Brian was one of the guys who stayed on, frankly, stayed on me and everybody else involved to keep the Mad Dog Dynasty dream alive. And I think I know I'm having a great time 5 years into this. So thanks a lot for staying on to that, Brian, and thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me tonight. I'm excited to talk about this and see what we can accomplish.
Great. Well, why don't we jump right into it? Of all the owners, why don't we do this? Why don't we stop, and I'm going to quickly recap your team for anybody, because maybe some guys that are going to listen aren't part of the Mad Dog Dynasty League. Maybe they are King for a Day fans that are tuning in to see what this is all about and to learn about Mad Dog, or maybe they're just bored or a bunch of nerds like us. So here's the
nerds
deal.
Nerds isn't a bad term anymore.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to look at your team. You right now, it's a 40-man roster. You have 37 players currently. You have 35 players under contract, and you have two players that you still have to make a decision on. Brian's team right now, Andrew Luck is his quarterback. Blake Bortles is the backup. On offense, the Mad Dog Dynasty League offers four offensive flex positions. Just you start four offensive guys. It doesn't matter if it's running back, wide receiver, or tight end. Brian has on his roster Toby Gerhart, Doug Martin, Ryan Matthews. That's running back. Wide receivers, Tavon Austin, Dez Bryant, Michael Floyd from Arizona, T.Y. Hilton, and Cordarrelle Patterson. At tight end, you've got Jace Amaro, Zach Ertz, Colby Fleener. Feel free to correct me in the pronunciations, because I'm the worst guy in the world for saying a lot of these names. I've been writing them for like 15, 20 years here. I've been writing these names down, first initial, last name. I butcher the heck out of them when I say them. Place kicker, Connor Barth, Randy Bullock, Blair Walsh. Defensive lineman, Cornelius Carradine, Chandler Jones, Deion Jordan, tough break on Deion Jordan. Cedric Thornton, Philadelphia defensive end. And Stephen Tuitt, defensive end from Pittsburgh. Linebackers, you've got Vontaze Burfict, Levante David, Mason Foster, Ryan Kerrigan, Brandon Marshall, linebacker Denver, Kevin Minter. Trent Murphy is still a decision you're making. Vincent Ray, linebacker Cincinnati. Craig Robertson from Cleveland, and Beyon Warner from Germany, playing for the Indianapolis Colts, is still another guy you have to make a decision on. Rounding out your team right now, Mark Barron from St. Louis, a defensive back. Eric Berry, who is still trying to get his health in order, not sure if he's going to play this year. Cam Chancellor, Seattle Seahawks, defensive back. Matt Elam from the Baltimore Ravens. Eric Reed over in San Francisco, and Kenny Vaccaro in New Orleans. So that is the roster. You're $23.95 under the cap. You have two contracts that aren't settled. So you pretty much have 35 players, and if you take those two guys, they're each 50-cent players right now. You have almost 25 total dollars, $24.95, to sign five players. over this off season. The Minotaur's moves thus far, I'll start with the cuts. They did cut Matt Barkley, Eddie Royal, Brent Celek, Jared Allen, Johnson from Detroit. I think it's George Johnson. David Harris, linebacker from the Jets, was cut. Antoine Bethea, defensive back San Francisco. Levon Landry from Indianapolis, defensive back. And Ryan Mundy from Chicago. I think Mundy moved on, maybe Tampa Bay or something, but those are the cuts. Decisions that you made this year, you signed Tavon Austin to a 3-year deal at 50 cents a year. You re-signed Zach Ertz, 3 years, $260 a year. Kobe Fleener, 3 years, $3.86 a year. Connor Barth will re-sign on a 1-year deal, 55 cents. Tank Carradine, 50 cents on a 3-year deal. Deion Jordan, you currently have him locked up, although you could change your mind, 3 years, 50 cents a year. Thornton from Philadelphia, 3 years, $114. Brandon Marshall was $549 a year. You put him on a 3-year deal. Robertson from Cleveland, $318 a year. You put him on a 2-year deal. Chancellor from Seattle, 3-year, $3.96 a year. Matt Elam, 50 cents a year. You put a 3-year deal on him. 3-year deal on Eric Reed, 50 cents. And Vaccaro, 50 cents, 3-year deal. So, that in a nutshell is your team right now heading into 2015. Now, here's what I wanted to here's what I wanted to ask you about. Of all the owners, you've made the biggest splash this offseason. You made 6 trades total. You traded completely out of the rookie draft. Then you traded back in. You picked up 4 linebackers this offseason in trades. You had, to start with, 2 of the top quarterbacks in the league in Matt Ryan and Cam Newton, yet you still went out and you traded to pick up arguably the top young quarterback in the game. Sewing it all up then, you took on 2 reclamation projects in Doug Martin and Cordarrelle Patterson. Honestly, Brian, your team really wasn't that bad at all to begin with. You finished 7-7 last year in a division that featured 3 of the top 4 scoring teams in the league. 2 years ago, you were 8-6. 3 years ago, you were 9-6, and you won the league title. So tell everybody, why did you make all these moves this offseason? What was your inspiration? What was your thought process?
My inspiration and thought process was really to go ahead and just get back to the championship game and win it all. In year 2 of our Dynasty League, I wound up winning the whole Kulu Kabang. I went in as a wild card, and it felt good. Obviously, that's the whole premise of playing fantasy football, is just to feel good about your team and what you accomplished at the end of the season. And obviously, nothing else makes you feel better than winning the whole, Kulu Kabang battle. Some of the big moves that I made, obviously, was acquiring Andrew Luck. To me, I felt that that was just a great acquisition. I didn't think that that was going to be slowing me down, especially for what I gave up for him. I gave up my first-round pick in 2015, a third-round pick in 2015. Mind you, that was the 4th pick overall, and then that was the 28th pick overall. The fourth pick and the 28th pick overall I gave up, as well as Cam Newton in that trade and Julio Jones. I felt that acquiring Andrew Luck and Levante David was definitely top-notch signature moves there.
And, Brian, just to let everybody know, that was the 4th overall pick, and then it was the 4th pick in the 3rd round, in addition to Cam Newton and Julio Jones. So, as you aptly described.
Yeah. And that was a, it was a risk. I mean, I started working with Matt's dream team with the trade prior to the end of the season. After the trade deadline was over with already, but I approached him in the middle of December. He and I, conversed a little bit back and forth with a few emails. And then it was really surprising, probably about, a week or within 10 days after the close of the season, I saw the email from Matt saying that, you want to confirm this, you want to move forward with this. And you know, we jumped on top of it and ended the whole thing. Needless to say, we put it through for votes, and you know, it's surprisingly enough, it got voted through. So,
rest is history.
That was my first big move. You also mentioned Doug Martin. Doug Martin was a surprise pick player in 2012 as his rookie season unfolded. And he was, you know, the following year in 2013, a top five pick in any fantasy football league. Unfortunately, you know, he had some injuries and a few things that happened that week or that following year. And he just kind of got derailed. I gave away my second round pick in 2016 for him. And anyways, I felt like there is, you know, obviously gas in the tank with that guy for being so young. At about the age of 24, you're still on the left-hand side of 30. And I just felt like there was gas, you know, just a lot of promise with that player to be able to turn it around and get back to that form that he hit in his rookie year.
Well, that explains Doug Martin. One of the things that I had to ask you about was Doug Martin and Cordarrelle Patterson, and what specifically was it about those two players that made you want to take on those two what I call reclamation projects, because both thus far in their young NFL careers have actually disappointed. They've both flashed potential, and coming out of the draft, they were the NFL draft, they were both looked upon as possible stars. So what was it, you've explained Doug Martin, what was it about Cordarrelle Patterson that made you give away the fourth pick in the second round?
Again, that was just, you know, based off of all stardom, you know, I mean, the potential is there. I felt obviously maybe I should have got him for a third round pick. But unfortunately I traded away the third round pick, so all I really had to work with was either a fourth round or a third round or fourth or fifth round or the second round pick. And I felt that the person I traded with, Scott Phillips, I didn't want to insult a very good old friend of mine by offering him a fourth or third. So that's why I went with the second round pick. But I did feel he was more closer probably to a third round pick. Could have held on there a little bit longer, see if he was just going to dump him out into the trash, or see if I could have got him for maybe a scrub player that I was going to go ahead and dump out into my trash basket, if you want to call it. But I'm trying to stay ahead of the ball game, trying to stay ahead of the curve this whole offseason, trying to form my team piece by piece. You know, I didn't make all these decisions, you know, in one sitting or in one moment. Each one of these decisions were made over time. And going back to the Cordarrelle Patterson deal, I just felt like it was a real solid player who has a lot of potential. I just think that the potential there is very, very high for him.
So with Cordarrelle Patterson, one of the things that I personally, watching him come out of the draft, I was so impressed by his ability to run after he had his hands on the ball, whether it was a kick return, whether it was a catch in open space. When he ran, he reminded me and he looked like Sterling Sharp. And it was incredibly, I got excited watching that kind of talent out on the field. Do you think that having Bridgewater starting to potentially this season come into his own and start to really take command of that offense, do you feel with Adrian Peterson in tow for the entire season that Patterson has a chance to lock up a number two spot? I mean, they've got Mike Wallace up there, and I think it's Charles Johnson, a former receiver that passed through the Packers camp. What do you think about Patterson's chances of starting?
I do believe that he has a 50-50 chance of being able to get one of the starting spots in the starting lineup. I think his talent is very much there. I think it needs to be polished like everybody. I think that a lot of these ball players with the right coaching, you can take from, you know, being a dud to a stud very quickly. And I just think that he has the potential, and it just really kind of comes down to the Minnesota coaching offense, or coaching, coaching wide receivers, all that mixed together. to be able to really make it happen. You know, I really do believe in Patterson as far as being a guy that you're going to go ahead and see. You know, I think that he has the potential hitting that 1,300 yards, 10 to 12 touchdowns this year. You asked about Bridgewater. And Bridgewater, it's funny because I looked at a lot of football stuff. And in the NFL draft, he was drafted in the late first round or early second round. I can't remember exactly where, but he was, he has all this potential and all this, magic and pizzazz and talent, that he possesses himself. Well, to go ahead and go backwards or go forward now, this year during the NFL draft, they always do the what if, what if teams could go back a year and redraft players after seeing them on the field. Well, Bridgewater was actually noted to be going number one to the Texans in one of those redrafts, and as opposed to Javon Clowney. So that there tells me a lot about their quarterback situation, that it's expiring, it's aspiring, it's moving forward, it's going to be one of the best in the league. And to go ahead and capture this whole scenario from top to bottom, I just feel that you can't have a player like Patterson sitting on the bench, only taking on,
I got to cut you off here. I can't stand all this Viking love. I can't stand the Viking love, man. We're just going to have to stop that. I know that you're marauding minotaurs, but we're going to leave those Vikes, those Norsemen alone, and let's move on to a couple other things I wanted to ask you about. Specifically, you beefed up on tight ends this offseason. Two of the deals you signed, Zach Ertz and Kobe Fleener. I know that Fleener is something that you and I have talked about in the past. You're very proud of being able to acquire him. Would you like to talk about those two moves and any other moves this offseason that, for instance, the 549 deal you gave to Brandon Marshall in Denver? I believe, what is his name, the other linebacker out there that was injured last year, Lavasian, Well, anyway, why don't you go ahead and talk about the tight ends while I look that up. Brandon Marshall isn't the only linebacker in Denver.
Okay. Sure. Starting off with the tight ends situation that I had, those tight ends were not drafted. They were not traded for. They were just dumped out there into free agency. Zach Ertz was dumped in his rookie season. And then you go to Kobe Fleener, and Fleener, I tried numerous times to try to trade for him with Bill downhill from here. And I tried numerous trade attempts and trade proposals with him, and I never heard back from him one time. And then it was just kind of one magical morning. I saw him out there on the drop list, and boy, I jumped on that and scooped him up. I felt that was a prime candidate. Kobe Fleener was the first-round draft pick out of the NFL. You just got to wait for the talent to develop. Zach Ertz, again, first-round talent, getting drafted out, or maybe second-round, early second-round pick. I just got to wait for that talent to develop. Tight ends don't develop overnight. But
Fleener finished sixth overall last year at tight end, and Ertz was 13th overall. So backing up what you're saying about giving guys time to develop and having it pay off. Danny Trevathan was the other linebacker, by the way, for Denver. If I'm not mistaken, Danny Trevathan is his name. What made you go with a $5.49 three-year deal on Marshall?
I feel that Marshall is going to definitely have the potential to go ahead and stay where he was at. Last year, he was a top three linebacker all season, all year long. And then, unfortunately, his season got cut short by the last two games with a knee injury, or was it a concussion? But anyways, he wound up
concussed
a little bit of time. He concussed me, yeah. He had a knee contusion. But anyways, to go ahead and break that down for you, he I feel that he can definitely keep it together. For 3 years, I felt that giving him the longer contract than 3 years, if I had to absorb the hit, if he doesn't produce, that I can absorb it, in year two and just knock him off the roster altogether. But I felt that, you know, he's a young player at the age of 26 years old, so I got him locked down so he's on the left-hand side of 30 yet. And, you know, hopefully he can just kind of keep that motor going. I mean, that's what we always hope for out of our ball players.
Well, let me ask you a different question, Brian, if you don't mind me taking a similar but different stance here. You, between the moves that you made and, frankly, trading with all three members of your division, I don't know if you realized that previously or not, but you, in this offseason, made a trade with both myself, Crazy Seven, Dream Team, Matt Blankenberg, and Show Me Your TDs, Scott Phillips. Some guys are afraid to trade within their division. What was your thought process in doing that, and how did it tie into your overall? I know you talked earlier about your wanting to shoot for a title this year. Is it just pull out all the stops and you didn't care if they were in your division or not? I mean, you're in a very high-scoring division, very competitive division. What made you not afraid to give other guys in your division pieces?
Again, you know, I mean, it's a matter that I have the drive, that I really feel like I have the talent within myself to be able to put together a winning team year in and year out. And that drive just comes from having to go ahead and make friends and make the best of those friendships. You know, I mean, as far as all these moves within my own division, you know, I think I just have a good connection with the people that I did make the trades with. Again, knew Scott Phillips for many, many years since we were little guys. Working with you, Rick, you know, I mean, that was a slam dunk just because of the fact you and I conversed, you know, several times throughout the throughout a month's time. It was Matt Blankenberg that I felt was going to be the one that was going to be the toughest one to even try to get close to making a deal with. but, you know, if you don't shoot for it, you don't get it. That's the mentality behind it.
Well, I got to throw something in real quick, Brian. I just want to say that for any owner that's listening to this, it's key to pay attention to how guys like to be approached. And Matt, for instance, you're not necessarily going to catch him on the phone, but if you text him or email him, he'll write you back. So I think a big part of it is recognizing who you're working with and approaching them in the mode that they appreciate to be contacted in, which I know you did.
Well, thank you. I mean, as far as trying to go ahead, you know, earlier this season, you talk about trades right now, I tried reaching out to Bill Novak. And unfortunately, you know, he just kind of came up short. You know, I mean, I was trying to offer him Matt Ryan, and I was looking at Quinn from his team, Robert Quinn, and unfortunately, he just never came back through. I tried several resources to try to get a hold of him, and you know,
I find for
down
Bill, it's best to just for Bill, it's best to just go to his house, just camp out, just do kind of a stakeout. Bring some sandwiches and a thermos of coffee and sit outside of his house in place of employment and just wait. Brian, we have about 7 minutes left, so let me ask you a few other questions if you don't mind.
Sure.
Specifically on the Adrian Peterson trade, I know some guys have wondered, why did you decide to trade Adrian Peterson? And hindsight's always 20/20. Now Adrian Peterson is in camp. You hypothetically could have gotten more for him. You didn't know that at the time. Why did you decide to trade Adrian Peterson for 2 second-round draft picks?
You know, that's a great question. You know, I wanted to get back into this year's draft. That was the motivation behind that. I was completely out of this year's draft. The motivation was to get back into this year's draft in 2015. To go ahead and rewind that just a hair, I know we're running out of time here, is that, you know, I had him on a one-year contract left, so I only had him for a limited amount of time. I already used my free signing on him, so, I mean, his salary would have just gone up on me next year if I would have kept him. He performed well, didn't perform well. But the last piece of the puzzle was, what side of 30 was he on? I mean, he's right there at 30. So, I mean, I think that he has a good, you know, set of legs underneath him for this season. You know, is he going to go ahead and be a good set of legs for next season? I couldn't tell you. But to go ahead and break that down, I'd rather have two young players that, once again, talked about it earlier in the show, where you can polish them and hang on to them, and hopefully they come through for you as studs in the next 3 to 5 years, as opposed to a guy that I know what's happening to him. You know, he's going to go ahead and cost me more money, and he's breaking down, and, you know, whether I can hang on to him. So that was my philosophy behind that.
All right, well, here we go. I got 4 questions left, and we have a minute for each question, so let's shoot.
All right.
What is the best move or moves that you've made in Mad Dog in all the 5 years that we've been doing this? What are your favorite move or moves that you're proud of?
Wow, there's just my favorite moves, I think, comes down to the original draft. I went ahead and I held off on getting any stud players until probably about after about 25 to 30 players were already off the board before I made my first move. And then from there, I wound up gaining Adrian Peterson right out of the gate. And then, you know, a lot of the other top players I was still keep my eyes on, I was able to grab at decent dollar ranges. And then basically towards the end of that whole draft point, I was able just to kind of bulldog anybody out of the way because I had a lot of money left. And I was able to buy up a lot of players at cheap prices. Again, my last part of that philosophy was that I went with defensive backs as opposed to linebackers. And if you look at year two when I won with 5 defensive backs and 1 linebacker that year.
Yes, you did. And I must say, you can't tell me that picking up Kobe Fleener off waivers wasn't one of your favorite ever moves. I know that you were always talking about Kobe Fleener. So I tell you what, next question. Everybody knows the horrendous Mike Ditka-esque Ricky Williams trade that I made for Arthur Brown, which will go down quite possibly as the worst move in league history. What is your worst move or moves that you've made in Mad Dog? What's your Arthur Brown?
Ryan Matthews, he has not performed. I've had him on the roster for 4 seasons now, and I'm still waiting for that one magical year where I'm going to get 300-plus points out of the guy.
Did you trade for him again?
I did.
Was that a trade?
I gave away. Yeah. I went ahead and traded away a first-round draft pick for him, and that was just a mistake.
And a linebacker, didn't you? Did you give up a really good linebacker starting linebacker in the first round?
I gave up Sean Weatherspoon. I gave up Sean Weatherspoon and the first-round pick, which wound up consequently being the number 12 pick overall. So, you know, that.
Well, you know what? I actually have to write this down because when I talk to Brian Frams, you're in trouble. I'm sure this will be one of his best moves. It'll be one of his favorite moves, and I think he took Keenan Allen with that pick. I'm not positive.
Actually, he took that trade and traded it to you, though, I think, if I remember correctly.
Oh, I probably traded it back, though. Well, listen, in your 5 years in the league, what advice would you give to a new owner, somebody brand new coming into the league? Really, this goes to the heart of what do you think about building a franchise or being a team in this league strategy-wise. What kind of advice do you give?
You know, you got to be patient. Gather up those draft picks and just be patient with them to develop. That's one thing I would totally suggest. And also, get that top quarterback. The quarterback position is so valuable in any fantasy format that you're ever in. And here with being in a dynasty league, that top quarterback is always, always going to be important.
Okay, Brian, last question. We have about a minute left. 5 years into Mad Dog, what are your thoughts on the league? What do you like? What do you dislike? Just take a good 30 seconds here before we tie this up and tell everybody, you know, maybe new guys in the future, if we ever get an open spot, that are thinking of joining the league, what do you like about it? What are your thoughts?
Things I like about it, obviously we have a great commissioner behind the walls here. He's definitely been a steadfast guy. It's great that we were able to put this together after so many years of talking about it. The first thing I like about it is the commissioner behind it. Secondly, it was very well thought out from the get-go. It wasn't like slapshot, let's put this together overnight. It was just a great thought-out plan. And as far as just everybody's thoughts were included when we first developed this league, you know, it wasn't just one person behind it. You know, it was everybody's thoughts were important. And
Brian, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you very much for coming on the show, and I want to thank everybody for listening. We'll see you again. This is the Mad Dog Dynasty League podcast. Remember, it's time to play the game.
Time to play the game.